You're listening to the HR Happy Hour Show with hosts Steve Bowes and Trish McFarland. Since 2009, the HR Happy Hour Show has been bringing you thought leaders, workplace and technology experts, academics, and more to take on the most important and interesting topics impacting work, human resources, technology, and the workplace. Learn more and listen to all the show archives at www.hrhappyhour.net. Hey, HR Happy Hour Show. What is happening? My name's Steve Bowes. With me, of course, Trish McFarland. Trish, what's happening?
Hello, Steve Bowes. How are you?
I am fantastic. Thank you very much. I feel like we haven't done the show in a little while. Or I did one
you
by myself.
You always say that. You know what? We could do a show every day, and I think you would always say, hey, we haven't done a show in a while.
Could we do a show every day? I'd be interested in that. I'd like to make that happen.
Okay, we'll chat later.
This is the best part of the day. It's the HR Happy Hour. What?
It is the HR Happy Hour. I'm very excited.
Me too. It's going to be a fun show today. We've got some really interesting topic to talk about, which I'm excited about. First off, Trish, we should thank our sponsor, Virgin Pulse. Been with the show now a little while, a couple weeks now, and we're excited to have them on board, www.virginpulse.com. Check them out and learn more about what they're up to there. Any other updates or news we want to share, Trish, before we sort of get into the conversation that we wanted to have on the show today?
No, you know, for me, I think I'm just wanting to say it's good to be off the road for a while. I have been, as you, many other analysts in the space, many other people in our industry, you know, spring is such a busy time, and I carry that all the way through May, and wow, it just feels good to have summer here. So yeah, much slower pace from a travel perspective, and I'm excited. So maybe that does mean more shows.
Yeah, that could mean more shows as well. It is good to be off the road too. It's been a good, very busy spring, no doubt. We've had some interesting events we've attended, written about some, done some shows for some. I did the very last show was from Greenhouse, an event we were at last week.
Right.
I thought it was a really good show as well, so folks can check that out. It's show number 247. This is show 248, untitled for the moment. So, Trish, we have to think of a title before the show's over, or at least before the show posts. So, yeah, I think I have one more event coming up before it really calms down a little bit, which is I'm going to go out to the HireVue event in a couple of weeks in Utah.
Oh, very good.
Which is loads of fun. Great venue. Really a super event as well. They do a great job at that HireVue event, so I'm looking forward to that. But, yeah, you're right. Other than that, it's been really good to be home. NBA Finals started last night. I'm excited about that.
That's a big deal in my household as well. We've been watching the games leading up to it, and my son was just telling me this morning he's very upset that it's almost the end of basketball. So
I am also upset. Your other son is telling you that too.
Both of you. Okay.
Yes, I do not know what I'm going to do with myself. I will say this though, and then we'll get onto the show. I know we did not want to make this a sports show. I pitched it. I was shot down, but I've been watching some tennis, French Open tennis a little bit. I've been getting into that. I do like to watch tennis on television. I like to play a little bit too. I'm very bad at it, but I do like to watch it as well. So that's going to be my transition sport, I think, until basketball starts again. It would probably be tennis.
Oh, very good. So, well, then I guess I won't give you my suggestion for my other son. So I told him, I said, well, you know what summer means? That's Big Brother time, right? We do Big Brother until football happens. So
I do like Big Brother. My actual son likes that as well. So we'll probably jump onto the Big Brother train. And one last thing, Trish, and we'll promise you we'll get to our real subject, which I think is a really interesting one, by the way, is an upcoming, and I'm telling you this because I know you recently did a webinar on Generation X and leadership, right? A couple weeks ago?
That's right, I did.
An upcoming season of Survivor, another fun show I think you like, and I know I like it too.
I do.
Is going to be there's always like a gimmick now in Survivor. There's always an angle, right, of the participants.
Right. It has to be.
So man versus woman or legends from the past, blah, blah, blah. So an upcoming season is going to be Gen X against millennials coming up.
I love it.
What's
not to love, right? I would like that brought into Big Brother, Dancing with the Stars, you know, any of those. They could all go that angle, right?
That should be everything.
That should be everywhere.
Every business meeting, every, you know, every sporting contest.
No, that's funny because if you were on the Gen X webinar I did with Ultimate Software, you would know that my whole take on it was that we're not that different. We can all get along. We're much more similar to the millennials than the boomers were. This is going to be a great time for Gen X leaders coming into power because of this close tie with millennials. And here you and I are now talking about sort of pitting everyone against each other. I love it.
I do too. So that's going to be fun. It will be a good summer for that. Yeah, I'm not sure when the Survivor comes on. I think it's next season. I don't know how Survivor really works in terms of that, but it's coming up in an upcoming season. That's all I know. So excited Very about good. That. Last thing on sports, and I promise, the European Soccer Championships are this summer, starting actually in a couple weeks. That's always a great watch as well for the soccer aficionado. So I'll be on that too. So all right, enough of this nonsense, Trish. Let's talk about something more interesting, or at least more relevant, shall we?
I would love to.
So here's the pitch. Each year, there's a big presentation, massive slide deck, 200 slides or so report that comes out from KPCB, big Silicon Valley VC investment type firm. It's called
the one with Mary Meeker.
Right. The Mary Meeker Internet Trends Report comes out every year. It's kind of a legendary report and slide deck, right? Probably been doing it 18, 20 years or so. And it just came out a few days ago. And each year, I always read the report. I usually write about it. And this year, for some reason, I didn't write about it at all. But I thought maybe we could talk about it on the show. So that's the short pitch.
Let's do it.
So I love digging into this report. It's long. It's like 215 slides. But I thought we could talk about some of the trends and how they'll impact HR and HR technology. All right? That's it. So should we go? Should we hit trend one? One of my favorite
ones? Trend one. Yeah, let's talk about some of them. Obviously, we won't get all of them in a short show like this. But we can hit on some of your most interesting ones or the ones that you found most compelling.
Yeah, absolutely. So number one is and let me just set a little context for people who don't know the report, and we'll link to where you can find the report on the show description. But this report covers kind of technology, internet trends, economic trends, demographic trends, communication trends. So it's a wide-ranging report. So I picked out and you picked out just a few things we thought were interesting. So the first thing I sort of latched on, because I do write about this a lot on the Steve Bowes blog, Trish, which you may be familiar with.
Oh, wait, you have a blog?
I do.
Oh, great. Maybe we can link to that as well.
SteveBose.squarespace.com. It's been chugging along famously for 8 or 9 years. I got to get a new blog.
All right, get to it.
It's okay. Demographics. World population growth rate is slowing. And if you're following along on the Mary Meeker report, this is from slide number 34. The world population growth rate is slowing to about 1.2% from about 2%, say, 40-odd years ago. And this is a really interesting one for me. We're even seeing this slowing down of the population growth rate, even in places where you wouldn't expect it, Trish, like even India and China, right? Which is, if you dig into the data, you'll find that's true as well. And you know, for a long time, higher birth rates have been the primary driver of labor force growth, right? Which then translates in theory, right, to economic growth and opportunity. And it's slowing down all across the world. And I don't know. I find that really, really interesting. And maybe we'll drop in the next part of this trend and then we'll talk about it some. So part two of this from the report is slide number 36 about global life expectancy, which is up a lot, as you'd imagine, in the last 50-odd years or so. It's up about 36% worldwide, and it differs, obviously, by country and things like that. But global life expectancy now about 72 years of age. So we've got slowing birth rates in most industrialized countries and many even developing countries, and people living longer at the same time. Really interesting in kind of how we see that playing out for HR and in workplaces here in the US, I find very, very fascinating. And this is something I've written about and thought about a lot. So I don't know, Trish, do you think about these demographic things a lot, like at all, or is it just me?
No, I think you're touching on something that, we should all be thinking about if we're not already. I think when you even think about maybe, as we mentioned before, Gen X being a little bit smaller, generation, globally, it wasn't just here in the U.S., but globally, and that does start having a major economic impact on how much spending is occurring and how health is being handled and all these other implications. And so you're right. If we're starting to see, you know, we saw that big spike in the millennial generation, now the generation following the millennials, which I've seen 20 different names of what we're calling them. So I'm just going to leave it out. But yes, if it's continuing to decline, I think that says a lot about where we're going to be from a work perspective when you think about maybe 15 or 20 years from now. And hopefully, in theory, I think, you know, many of us will still be involved in the workspace at that point. And so it is something we need to be thinking about. And I don't know, what do you think about in terms of, you know, as technology advances, maybe it's not as big of a deal, right? Because you'll have technologies to sort of replace some of those skills or tasks or things that people did, but with a shortage of workers that will continue to get more prevalent. Yeah, mm-hmm. I think we could face the war for talent. We think we had the war for talent before. It's really going to be on.
Yeah.
But, you know, when this plays out in the next 10 to 15 years, I would imagine.
Yeah, I'd agree, Shish. I think there's a couple things there's some shorter term things, some, I guess, like everything else, right? There's some shorter term things, I think, which will be things that'll be a little more top of mind for most of the folks who might be listening to this. And then sort of medium and longer term things that might be just a little bit more speculative, but also interesting to think about. One would be, you know, in the shorter term, I think you're just going to see, in general, just an older quote unquote workforce, right? More folks working longer than before, and a general decline in labor force participation overall. In fact, today, Trish, earlier this morning, the monthly unemployment report, BLS report, came out, right? And it was kind of disappointing. I don't know if you saw it this morning, but it was really, really low number of jobs created, something like 38,000 only, which is the lowest number in about 6 years on a monthly basis, but which is something to talk about separately. But the other nugget that comes out in that report, among others, is labor force participation rate, which I know I've written about a bunch of times, and also has tweaked downward. Something like 500,000 people left the workforce in the last month, and there's lots of reasons why that's happening here in the U.S. But the labor force participation rate is at a yearly low, and it's approaching its all-time low since, like, we started tracking this thing. So we're saying, you know, we're having just a smaller workforce in general to recruit from, right? Overall, right? So at a very high macro level, the pool of workers that are available to any organization, you know, is typically going to be smaller. And it seems like with these demographic trends, and the labor force participation rate is really showing no signs of reversing, right, anytime soon. It's going to get even tighter. And then just throw in the third bit of information that plays into this is wages, right? So if we're saying the unemployment rate actually was ticked down again. It was 4.7% announced this morning. So unemployment is less than half of its peak at the end of the recession. The labor force seems to be contracting, right? The birth rates and the replacement rates of workers are slowing, right? So smaller talent pools has got to, Trish, don't you think just the economics of it has got to start really putting much more pressure on organizations on wages, right? As you talked about the war for talent, right? I mean, one way to compete is got to be on wages, right? I mean, we need to see wages going up. I think organizations are going to have to address that reality starting really soon.
I think they are. I think the one thing, though, I would just point out that when you're looking at things like the birth rates, and while, you know, globally they are decreasing, if you look at countries like the United States or areas, you know, such as I think, you know, East Asia or even Europe and Central Asia, it's been a little more consistent. So maybe it will depend more on what part of the globe you're in as to how much that impacts you initially. I don't know. I mean, I guess it's a hard prediction to say, and maybe it warrants a whole show separately to really dig into it and think about these things. But I do feel like, just, you know, it seems like the most dramatic decreases are happening in India and the Middle East, for example, or even, you know, Africa.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe that's not enough to really impact the global job market in such a way where we would really see and feel it here in the United States or in, like I said, in, you know, in Asia or Europe. So it'd be interesting to see how it plays out.
Right. And you're there. And you're right. There's really two sides of this story, right? There's one that's the short term, the idea of there's fewer people in the labor force now. For various reasons why. A lot of it's retirements. We're going to talk demographics in a second, but a lot of it is retirements, right? At least half of the decline in labor force participation has generally been attributed to retirements, right? The baby boom generation slowly but surely falling out of the workforce. And at the same time, there's been an uptick on the younger folks staying in school, right? Particularly when the recession was really bad and just coming out of the recession when, you know, if you were coming out of school, it was pretty tough to find a decent job, right? And so you saw a lot of those folks not enter the labor force as well, continue their schooling, try to take an advanced degree, you know, just stay out of it until they could find something better. And it was taking them much longer to find that job as well. So, and then the longer term trends, as you said, like those trends in birth rates and life expectancy, those play out over time. But I just read this morning, you know, I was thinking about this, we were talking about doing the show. I read a different article, not from the Mary Meeker report, but a different article that was talking about some parts of Japan are now the government is paying people to have more children. You get like a, you know, bonuses up to several thousand dollars for each new child you have, right? And because they're so concerned in certain regions of that country of just not having enough people, right, to keep things running in the next 20 years or 15
right.
to 30 years.
Right, and I don't think that's too far-fetched to think you could have something like that here where there are certain additional tax breaks or incentives in order for people to, you know, to get those numbers like trending back in the other direction. But yeah. Especially, you know, I do think we're sort of, you know, we do talk about having the retirement of the baby boom generation impacting us. And this is for a future show, which, you know, to give a teaser, we're going to actually have John Sumser on within the next week to specifically talk about the gig economy and how the baby boom retiring or not is going to impact the gig economy, because I think the thesis there is that we really won't see people retiring in as large numbers as we expect. They might retire from their full-time job, but they might then turn to a either short-term gig or become a contractor or, you know, a knowledge worker, something along those lines. So, you know, I think countries are going to have to start being very creative when they look at the macro level on both how are we going to incent people from a birth rate perspective and how is that going to impact our country in the next 20 to 30 years afterwards in terms of where the workforce is and the needs of the country. So, and I don't know, you know, it'd be interesting if we could find someone or had research on, you know, 50, 60 years ago, was that even a thought? I don't recall. I don't recall, I will say in my career, I haven't heard everything of course, but I don't recall in my career ever hearing a discussion about birth rate and how that, you know, from a country perspective, was going to impact the workforce much later down the road. So
yeah, I'd agree.
Maybe that's what we have to be thinking about.
It probably doesn't feel like an individual organizational discussion as you're sitting around the planning table, right, doing your budgets and doing your workforce plans for the next year, or even the next 2 or 3 years. It's definitely a longer view thing, a macro thing, but it does manifest itself, right, locally, in tightening of labor pools. Maybe it takes a while, but sometimes, you know, if you were in a big capital intensive business, say for example, and you're making decisions about where to deploy your resources, I think sometimes you probably have to think of these things, right? Like, you're not going
to city to city, Steve. I mean, think about, you know, which cities are on the rise and which are in decline. That's a way that a city planning committee could certainly start to think about how do we incent people to not just move here, how do you incent people to have their families here, grow their families here, so, you know, so that there is a robust labor pool in our city. I mean, these are certainly bigger than organizational level questions, but it's very important. And I think maybe that's where we've not spent enough time, you know, as an actual community thinking about what are the dollars that you and your community are going to lose in the next 20 years if you're not thinking ahead about how do you, you know, it's always about getting people to move to your city.
Yeah, right.
Or not leave your city, right? It's very rarely about how are we going to grow our city with the people we already have.
Yeah. Trish, I love this stuff. I love it. I you know, I'll argue all day that it's important and people should be thinking about it. Hopefully I've convinced somebody out there, Will. Let's we could talk about this some more, but I think we should probably jump ahead. I think we should jump ahead. We're this is Steve Bowes and Trish McFarland, of course, HR Happy Hour 248. We're talking about some of the big trends from the Internet Trends Report that just came out this week from Mary Meeker and company at KPCB. I hope I said that right. I love trend two, Trish, that I picked out. Hopefully you're okay with it, because I love it, because it's the one that half the people line up and say you shouldn't talk about this stuff, and the other half kind of say it's important and we should talk about it. And this is the generations in the workplace and the generations in society in general. So I'm going to read this right from the report.
Not a fan. Okay, go ahead.
I'm going to read this little statement right from the report, because I think I agree with it, of course. That's why I think it's great. Each generation has slightly different core values and expectations that are shaped by the events that occurred in their lifetimes. And I believe that's true. Let's just start with that. Do you think that's a fair statement?
Can I be on the fence about that? Okay, yes. Are the things that you're exposed to impactful? They are. However, I would just think there needs to be more context around that statement. For example, in doing the research for just the presentation I did around Generation X, even though Gen X, which I'm a part of, is the smallest generation right now in terms of number of years, right, which is roughly 1965 to 1980. I mean, you might see it stated a year off here or there. But
just for the record, in the Mary Meeker report, she does also say it's 65 to 80 as well.
Okay. I've also seen, 64 to 77. So anyway, roughly that range, right? It's the shortest time period for a generation. The amount of things that happen, I mean, you're thinking about things like Vietnam, going into space, everything to do with computers, everything to do with the internet, everything to do with all types of technology really occurred in Gen X. So even in a short time span like that, there is so much that happens. But I would argue that also significantly impacted the baby boomers, those very same events. So I'm probably not buying into that as a primary reason why a certain generation would behave in a certain way. I don't know. I just don't see – I feel like we all probably have the same things that are important. Maybe we just rank them a little differently. That's all. But yeah, I just don't see that the differences are that great when I've really dug in and done research on even the baby boomers. Yes. I just don't see the differences that great.
So I come down on slightly more on the side of, hey, I kind of buy this. I kind of see this. And I believe that people, even if it's subconscious, and please don't anybody out there tell me, well, I'm a baby boomer and I love Snapchat. No one cares about that. And that doesn't and honestly, that doesn't matter to the overall question. It doesn't matter if your grandma is the best, technologically savvy person there is. That no, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, because at a big level, right? Papers. If you talk about, like, say, the baby boomers, right? They grew up in post-war boom times. Things were good, and then all of a sudden, things start to get not so good, right? Civil rights and JFK and Vietnam and the war and Watergate.
Wait! You're now naming things that happened in Gen X.
Yeah, but when you were. How old were you when Vietnam was going on? You were one or two. So that Vietnam didn't shape you as a person that much, right? Much more important to you would be Reaganomics, the end of the Cold War, right? The AIDS epidemic.
Well, that's a different thing. Okay.
Right? Then MTV.
That's different than what we're talking about. Because you can't say if you were born in 1980, which is still technically Gen X, MTV coming about in 83 had no impact on a three-year-old.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. I disagree. I don't think that those type of events impact one generation more than another. Being able to have a home computer certainly impacted baby boomers as much as it did many Gen Xers.
I think it matters at the inflection points of your life, the major inflection points of your life. So when you become kind of an aware, participating, functioning person in society, whatever age that is, 12, 13, early teen years into your teen years, I think then sort of as you get into, say, if you go to college and into your career and your early career, right, I think it matters then. And I think it matters a third time in an important way is around the time you're starting to think about family, children, so on and so forth, right? So I think what's going on in society and going on in the country matters the most at those inflection points, right? And I think that I think you, I don't think anyone can argue, Trish, I hope you don't try to argue this, that, you know, you and you and I are Gen X. We're close to the same age. Like that, and all the people in our bucket, you know, sort of experienced many of the same things societally, culturally, economically, politically at those same inflection points, right? So let's just say, for example, if when the majority of Gen Xers were coming into their early career year, say 21 through 25, right? What was going on in the economy in that time period, say the late 80s to the early 90s, right? So if times were good or if they were bad as a generation, that you kind of were impacted by them at a macro level. And I do think, I believe it. Okay, I believe this. Maybe I'm wrong. I believe that this does impact the way you think about things like jobs and careers and your relationship to the organization, your relationship to authority, your relationship to the social contract, right? And so so anyway, I think it's important.
Steve, right? I'm shaking my head.
Tell me, why am I wrong on that? I think I'm right. I think it matters.
I don't think it's a matter of being wrong. I just don't think the impact is as big as I would argue that your own way you were raised in the community or environment you live in. So, for example, if you grew up in a wealthy, well-to-do home, exposed and given many opportunities for education and for things and for, you know, traveling and being worldly or whatever, I think that your worldview and your outlook could be very different from someone in your same generation who weren't afforded those same opportunities. I think that would have a bigger impact on how you approach the job market or politics or things like that based on your own experience from your socioeconomic level. Mm-hmm. I think and opportunities for education, I think that's a much bigger impact than actual whether or not MTV was around or not when you were, you know, in your formative inflection point years. I think also the fact that if you are talking about a certain generation, it doesn't take into account the fact that within any given generation, there are always going to be people who are early adopters, people. And that goes back to the people saying, well, you know, I'm 75 years old and I'm on Snapchat. And this is a true story. My dad literally last week texted my son and said, what's this Snapchat and should I be on it?
Yeah, but
my dad is turning 76. Now, I know you're going to argue that's just one person. But here's the thing. My dad, who is from the silent generation, who has been through all of these things, who can be very cynical at times, is also someone who is smart enough to know that if you don't have to be an early adopter, but if you do adopt certain technologies early on, you will have a better opportunity for connection with your family,
Trish,
with friends.
You're making my argument for me, and Mary Meeker made it too. We were talking about the Mary Meeker Internet Trends Report.
Not a generation thing.
I'm reading right from the slide that I referenced a little bit earlier, slide 51.
Well, that's not anybody's, what you said.
Well, here we go, Trish, slide 51.
Oh my gosh.
Silent generation, in the box that's titled technology, and it's kind of like their approach to technology and their attitudes to technology, it says here, and I quote, for your dad and the silent generation, have assimilated in order to keep in touch and stay informed, right? That's your dad getting on Snapchat so he can get in touch with his grandchildren, right? That's exactly
that. No, but
that.
He was always that way. Like, he
right.
was
it's right.
always
it's
right. that way.
You're making
it
my
wasn't just
warm.
Now.
I'm not saying it was just now, but I'm saying you're
so
making
it. So then it's not anything about the silent generation, because there are plenty of people from that generation who were never that way. They were never that way.
Of course.
And that would be my argument now. We know Gen X people right now who care nothing about social. They cannot possibly see the value of social media, even though you and I could sit there and give them 100 examples each of how every job we've had in the last 10 years has come from knowing someone on social, or every opportunity, or every, you know what I mean? So I just don't buy into the generation thing being as important. I think that's it's a cop out. It's an easy way to label people and stereotype people, and it doesn't really take into effect the context of what really influences behavior.
Well, I will say this, a couple things. Of course, when you try to explain or categorize or understand such a, you know, large groups of people, of individuals, millions and millions of people, of course, whatever explanation, categorization, description, whatever understanding you think you've come from, of course it can't fit for every person in that group. It just can't. And no one's arguing that, nor am I.
But it creates barriers. It creates barriers to effective organizational operation. If we preach to all of the baby boomers and to all the Gen Xers for years and years how awful the millennials are, how they're lazy and they don't want to do work and they want to be promoted without experience, all the things we've heard, and we've been hearing them for 10 years, what is in our heads?
Well,
in our heads is going to be that every single millennial on our teams that walks through our door to become an employee is lazy bums. And that's just not true, but it's brainwashing us and we're allowing it. So I'm just saying, I think people should stand up to this whole notion of the generation bullshit. I'm sorry. You've got me fired up.
You're fired up. Trisha's fired up. Well, we could probably, I don't think we're going to sort of,
Not going to resolve this, Steve.
But I will leave it at this. A couple things that are a little bit more practical, right, Ben. Let's steer this back from the abstract to slightly more practical. That is true in organizations today, or if it hasn't in your organization yet, it's becoming true, or just will. The math will make it so that the millennials are now the largest cohort in many, if not most, workplaces, right? So forgetting whether or not we should care about that, let's just state it and just say that's true now, or it's becoming true really quickly. Secondly, in some of the data that we talked about in the demographic trend, many of these older workers, and say in the boomer generation, are hanging around longer, right? That's an offshoot of some of the demographic trends. So, we do have this kind of, and let's not even talk about Gen Z, but I guess soon, right? The oldest Gen Z, 1997-ish or so, in just a couple more years, those folks will start entering workplaces beyond how they are entered now. I know they're, part-time jobs.
Post-college, you assume, yes.
Yeah. So, the challenge is, and this is not new ground, and I'm not breaking any new, this is not any kind of crazy idea here. The fact that you probably are likely to have wider dispersions in the ages in people in your workplace than ever before. And that is an issue, I think. So forgetting about whether or not all baby boomers are like this or most millennials are like that, or who cares? The fact of the matter is people are different at different stages of their life. What's important to them is different.
That's it. You just hit it. That's different. Life stage is different than generation. I agree with you.
But it's close. It's kind of the same. It's
related.
Like, there are two roads that run parallel to each other for certain, right? I mean, life stage and generation, right? I mean, again, I know they're outliers. I know in the Gen X cohort and the millennial cohort, people are people, and this is actually the next slide I wanted to talk about.
Life stages are ways to bring people together. Stating it as generations is ways to show how we're different. So for example, regardless if I'm Gen X and I have a team full of millennials, when they go to buy their first homes, I can recall what that feels like, right? I can put myself back in my, 25, 26, 27-year-old self and remember like, wow, okay, that was really intimidating. It's very scary. It was very, it's a big step, or my first children or whatever, right? So I think if you start talking about people in the workplace in terms of where they are in their life stage, you would have more people relating to each other instead of feeling like they're so different from each other. That's my point. We're all way more similar. We just need to sometimes be reminded of, hey, it is important. It's sort of like, you've got a young teenager. I have, 12-year-olds that are thinking they're teenagers. The things that they find extremely important and huge in their world are very different than what I might think of as nothing. That's not the case. It's extremely important to them. We just have to remember what that's like.
I remember what that feels like.
And so the same way with millennials.
I don't disagree, Trish, that what those kids think are important or what they're thinking about or what's influencing them is very similar. I could then make my argument that pretty much every other kid in their school in the community and in this state and in this country around those same ages kind of think those same things are kind of important and interesting and influential as well, right? And then there's my generational argument, right? I think life stage is just a different way of kind of saying generation.
Oh my goodness, right? Killing me. You're really killing me.
So this is the second part of this, and we've got to move on because we'll never agree, and I'm not sure anybody's still listening. But The second thing that's interesting. So for our HR folks, I'm trying hard, even though it's more fun to talk about theories. So what we're seeing is that as the millennial generation becomes the dominant generation in the workplaces, I think it's instructive to look at that in a little bit more detail in terms of things like diversity, education, attitudes, right? And I think so. Just like society is getting in America for sure, right? It's getting more diverse, right? Getting more multicultural. Getting, you know, their millennial generation's getting married later. They're having children later. Having fewer of them, like we talked about in the first step, right? So
because the baby boomers and Gen Xers that you describe are giving them hassle in the workplace and not wanting to promote them and give them raises, Steve. Come on. All right, go ahead.
So my point is this, right? With these generational shifts come most organizations or many organizations try to be kind of are mirrors of their of the community that they exist in and in a large scale, like the society overall. And what's happening, right? Much more diverse, much more open-minded, much more flexible. And again, you'll argue that maybe I'm wrong on this, attitudinally a little bit different approaches to work and the workplace itself, right? Maybe, you know.
I think they're more courageous because they're more outspoken about it. I feel like the millennials, they're the people I wanted to be when I was that age. And let me explain. So in my HR Ringleader blog, which maybe you've heard
what?
Of. Maybe
you have a blog?
I know, right? No, I wrote a post about several years ago and revisited it recently. Where when I was about 27, I had those same feelings. I had a job at PricewaterhouseCoopers. I felt like my boss just couldn't possibly be recognizing me fast enough. I knew it all. Why wasn't I getting promoted faster? And let me tell you what, back then, it's like you were getting promoted so quickly in a place like that. It was ridiculous in hindsight. And I had zero appreciation for that. My dad, you know, being from the silent generation, told me that my baby boomer boss actually knew more than me, believe it or not, mm-hmm. and tried to explain to me to slow it down. And here's why. And so, look, I didn't have the title of millennial, but I felt the exact same way. But I didn't know how to articulate it, or maybe I didn't have the courage or the guts to articulate it like they do. Maybe they feel more empowered that's why we're hearing it more. But to me, the underlying thoughts that they're having is no different than what many of us had when we were at that same life stage. We wanted to be recognized. We wanted someone to hear that we had thoughts that were important too when we were in our late to mid-20s. You know, we were valuable in our mid-20s. I feel like that's no different. Again, I feel like we need to remind ourselves what it felt like to be that age. It has nothing to do necessarily with the political and things that went on as they were being raised.
Right. Yeah.
As much as it is a life stage. That's, to me, that's the difference between true generational definition versus life stage.
That is a great example, Trish. I'm not going to allow myself to be convinced you're right, though. Just not yet.
You don't have to.
But I liked it. I liked the way you explained that. So, hey, there's loads of great stuff more on this. I would love to keep talking about this, and we should. But we probably should. Let's try to squeeze in one more trend before we wrap the show. We've been going for a while, but there's one more. And this is one, Trish, I latched onto when I read the report, because this is like a bone to you, all right? Why don't you tell us, before we get into it, tell us what Stitch Fix is for folks who don't know.
Oh, gosh. Okay, see, you are throwing me a bone now. You're surprising me here. So Stitch Fix is an online service where you sign up, you give your preferences, sizes, price range for clothing and accessory items, and as often as you would like, they will send you 5 pieces of clothing or other articles of accessories that you can then decide whether or not you want to keep. If you keep all 5 items, you get 25% off. If you return all 5, they only charge you a $20 styling fee, or you can keep any, you know, amount in between and pay what the cost of the item is. So for me, I use it predominantly when I have business things coming up. I've been doing it about a year. So for example, I'm getting ready to go to Inforum, which is Infor's big user event that's coming up in July, and I'm going to be speaking there. And so I let my stylist know, hey, I'm going to be in New York City in July. So she'll take the weather into account and the time of year. And I said, I would really love, you know, some business dresses, two or three of them at least. Can you please find something? And then she'll go out and do all the shopping and I can give her ideas of stylistically what I like, but she's typically right on the money. And not only that, when I wear the Stitch Fix items, I always get stopped, whether it's in airports or on business sites. People just stop you and they're like, where did you get that? That looks great. So it's pretty good service from all the ladies that I know that use it. So that's the lowdown on Stitch Fix. What does it say in the report about Stitch Fix?
So in this report, the most influential report on technology and economics and demographics, right, that everybody awaits with bated breath every year, there's actually a small section devoted to Stitch Fix specifically, right? And how Stitch Fix applies a data-driven process to try to understand your needs, your preferences, the things you like, really data-driven onboarding process. In the report, it's described as a mix of art and science. So the process will use things like ask you about your activities and your hobbies and the things you're interested in doing. Do you like – and I guess a lot of folks do this. I am not one of them, Trish. They see something they like on the internet and they'll tag it on Pinterest, right? Pinterest is still a thing, apparently. It's still around. So if you do that, and if you like see clothes on different websites that you like or just looks that you like, and you put them in onto a Pinterest board, you can share that with your stylist at Stitch Fix, and they can take that into account as well, along with some algorithms. Excuse me, I just bumped into my microphone here. Some algorithms that they can apply to this to try to come up with the items that they think you would like, and then they ship them to you. A couple of really interesting things from the data is that I don't know how many customers Stitch Fix has, but let's just say it's in the tens of thousands. It's probably more. Almost everyone, 99.99% of the boxes that get sent, right, that have the five things in them that you described,
right,
99.9% of them are unique. So it's not like essentially everyone is different. Every single box that goes out to one of their customers is different, right? And then over time, right, with feedback and giving your preference, your rating, and well, not just your ratings, but what you keep and what you buy versus what you send back, and it gets smarter. And again, we mass all this data together, we smash it together, and what results is just a service that's really, in your mind, is just for you. It's like they know me, they know what I want, and they're serving you on an individual level, but they're doing it at scale at the same time, which is remarkable.
Yes. And that is exactly how they make you feel, too. You've hit it. That's it.
So, yeah. And so without going more into it, there's plenty of data in the Mary Meeker report about Stitch Fix. Like, I thought about this from an for our workplaces, Trish, what would the Stitch Fix experience mean at work? Could we have one? Is it possible? Does it make sense to? How would that manifest itself with HR, with HR systems, or just how we create employee experiences at work? I think that's fascinating.
You're right. And I think that's just it. We've talked about employee engagement for so many years and no one's been able to really make a difference. No matter what technology we're using or what surveys we're using, the timing isn't right. And it's because of that. It's because we've gotten so fearful of giving any candidates maybe get a little more unique, experience with an organization. But once you're an employee, you typically don't. Everyone thinks you have to do everything the same for every employee all the time. And you don't. I think you could give them a more Stitch Fix like experience as you're asking them about ways that they would like to be interacted with, how would you like to be recognized? So instead of putting in a recognition system, for example, that recognizes everyone the same way, like maybe socially or with badges or with, gift cards, right? We assume we know what works for everyone. Well, it doesn't. And so, yes, I think as technology is able to start giving a more customized approach for everything from how performance is reviewed to how the rewards are handed out, or whatever, you're going to find much greater satisfaction because you do feel like, again, it's back to you matter. And that's what Stitch Fix has figured out. I think, too, giving an employee, much like a Stitch Fix customer, that communication tool so that they truly feel like not just that they give you the feedback. Like if you're an employee and you give feedback, a lot of times you feel like, well, nothing ever comes of it. I guarantee you, if I give feedback to my stylist, right, she will absolutely come through for me. Like, right. I, like I'm gonna we'll hey we'll see on the next show. I'll give it a little quick Stitch Fix update. By then I'll have my box. I guarantee there's going to be two or three dresses in there that are going to be similar to what I've told her I like in the past, things I've pinned on my Pinterest board, which I don't like Pinterest, but I do use it for that. And then there's got to be some aspect. I don't know how we'd capture this in HR, but this is maybe where the human resources or the business leader's expertise comes into play, much like with Stitch Fix, where if I pin something, there was a point where I pinned a blouse that I really liked, and it was very different from anything I have ever worn before. I didn't think much of it. It was sort of like I saw it online, clicked pin it, you know, done. About a month later, I get this blouse, and it's from my stylist, and she says, hey, I saw you had pinned this blouse, but I really think that this color would work much better for you.
Oh, okay.
Based on what she knew about me and based on what she knew about the clothing I had already been receiving for the last year, she was 1,000% right. It was the same blouse, different color, completely worked, better with my eyes, all these things. Like, so sometimes even, but that's the point. Sometimes you do know better than the employee exactly what they want. So if they tell you, this is what I like, you might tweak it a little bit and give them an even better experience. So if we can capture that in HR, that would be amazing.
You actually look
to your boss like, wow, my boss knows me sometimes better than I know myself. Isn't that great?
Yeah. And I think this is going to be something that could be a differentiator in organizations, because the Stitch Fix example is a great one. And it was highlighted in the report. And I know you're a big fan, which is why I wanted to talk about it on this show. But if you think about it, it's not just that. Think about consumption of lots of types of media, for example, right? We used to, you know, our baby boomer parents, Trish, used to sit in front of the television and watch the nightly news, right? And watch the few programs that came on the various networks, right? And so we all know the story, right? How right. things like that have changed and media consumption has changed. But it's not the initial change in media consumption wasn't so much, it was more about just the volume. Right. So then MTV comes along and cable TV comes along, and now we have more choices. And then the internet comes along, and now we have, an unlimited amount of choices, right, to consume information, content, entertainment, information, news, what have you, sports. But now where are we going? We're going to experiences that individuals are crafting for themselves on an on-demand basis, right? So whether that's playlists that you're doing, right? The first big thing, right, was the iTunes playlist, right? The iTunes experience, right? And now video on demand and the things people are doing on many of the social networks, right, which are all tailored very specifically to their own enjoyment, right? The algorithmic feed, right? We've heard so much about with the social networks like Facebook and Instagram now as well, right? That this combination of, you know, the algorithmic feed is the social network version of the Stitch Fix stylist, right? Figuring right. out, learning about you and figuring out what you might want to see at the right time that you want to see it. And so in the workplace world, in the HR world, right, is are we getting to the point now? And I think we are. And again, we're running really long on time, so we probably can't get into the specific technologies. But we are thinking about some technologies, and some of the vendors are thinking about technologies that are attempting to do that, right, to push the information, say whether it's a piece of learning content or whether it's a reminder to recognize someone, or it's, hey, if you're about to put someone in for a promotion, these are the three other things you really should think about doing, right, before you think that you need to do them themselves, right? So technologies that can enable and can support a better understanding of the workflow and the processes that you don't have to necessarily remember them themselves, and they're much more tailored to your own experience or your own context in which you're having experience. Like, I mean, you know, I'll throw out questions like this, like, Trish, 99.9% of the Stitch Fix boxes are unique and individual, right? Well, how come right. like every employee gets the same benefits to choose from? Like, you know, they can make choices, but they all get the same choices, right? The same five things to choose from, you know?
Well, I mean, I do think in that case, you have to, that comes into play. You can't discriminate. You have to make sure that your benefit plans, you know, if you offer choices, that's reasonable. You can't just let everyone have a completely different package. It's just not reasonable.
What if I was, what if more time off was more valuable to me than, I don't know. I'll pay a higher copay on my medical and I want like more time off. Like that's more valuable to me.
I think that
if you actually
could get it to where it would not lead to discriminatory practices, that would be wonderful. But I think that the way we're programmed as people it would be very hard to do that consistently. Someone would feel at some point they were being discriminated against by the type of benefits they were being offered.
Well, I'm not going to give up on this. I'm going to think about it some more. Maybe this would be a good subject.
I know we're wrapping up the show for today, but I do have a pitch for you.
Go ahead.
Based on our discussion. And I don't know if you recall, but we actually met Lindsay Varney, who is the director of talent at Stitch Fix when we were at Greenhouse.
We did.
And so maybe it makes sense to have Lindsay on, not just, maybe to give us a more in-depth look behind the scenes at Stitch Fix, but from a talent perspective, are they buying into their own model? It'd be interesting to find out if they're using any of those same approaches with their internal employees as well. So
yeah, that would be a good future show. All right, we'll try to make that happen. That's a really good idea. Well, I love this report. You can find the report. I did pull up the website while we've been talking. It's www.kpcb.com/internet-trends. That's where you go to get this report we've been talking about for the last almost an hour. kpcb.com/internet-trends, internet-trends, and we'll link to it in the show description as well. I love this report. I love talking about this stuff. So thanks, Trish, for bearing with me, humoring me today on a Friday. I appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem. This was a great discussion.
Okay, good stuff. So that's it for me. Anything else from you?
No, just everyone have a good summer. Stay tuned for some exciting shows. Steve and I have a lot planned this summer, so stay tuned.
Great. Thank you, Trish. Have a great rest of the day. Thanks to our friends at Virgin Pulse, virginpulse.com. And we will see you next time on the HR Happy Hour Show. Thanks for listening to the HR Happy Hour Show, your source for information and conversation on work, the workplace, technology, and more. Learn more and listen to all the show archives at www.hrhappyhour.net.
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here.
We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.